Will you join me for a moment to center ourselves and to pray as we prepare to hear the message? God of all that is, was, and will be, may the words of my mouth and the meditation of all of our hearts be acceptable to you, our rock and our redeemer. Amen. So, each of the readings that you heard today gave me a word on which to base this message. And those words are gift, belonging, and challenge. Gift, belonging, and challenge. First, to gift. Jim read from Genesis, a passage we all probably know, the rainbow passage, appropriate today on the day of the Pride Parade. This is a familiar passage to many. After the flood, God sends a rainbow as a promise never to cover the earth again with water. It is helpful for us to remember in our day and age that this story of a flood covering the earth is repeated in other cultures and other foundation myths. Gilgamesh, perhaps, comes to mind. In our time, and with the benefit of 2,000 years of science, I see now this story as a gift freely given, done nothing to deserve type of gift. I have a picture that I cherish. It is a photograph of a perfect double rainbow. And within it, in the exact center, is a remarkable splash, a pool, a lake, a pot of gold, if you will, right in the middle. I took that picture the first time my mother came out of her house following the death of my father. I took her grocery shopping because one has to continue to do these things. My mother's still alive, but she has macular degeneration and has not seen much but colorless shapes for a long time. But that day, that light was so bright and so golden and so vivid that she could see it, and she could see all the colors of the rainbow because of it. And not only could she see it, but I was given the gift of seeing her face bathed in that light, full of joy that I had not seen in quite a while. In the midst of heartbreak and loss, there was beauty and there was joy. Now I know, as we all know, that a rainbow is a meteorological phenomenon that is caused by reflection and refraction, remember those words, and the dispersion of light in water droplets, resulting in a spectrum of light appearing across the sky. And this knowledge makes it not one iota less marvelous, but more so. And this knowledge makes it not one iota less marvelous, but more so. And in the story of the Hebrew people, this wonder, this marvel, inspired a story of a sign utilized by a writer who was not a weatherman to indicate God's promise to a certain group of people a ton of years ago. And this selfsame wonder, separated by centuries, was to me on that particular morning with my mother a sign of the depth and the breadth and the heartbreaking open reality of the gift of life and of color and of diversity and of beauty simply being. It was the dawning of an attitude of gratitude. And this attitude of gratitude for this gift, for these gifts, holds out to us, invites us into both the gravity and the incredible lightness of faith. And so my second word, belonging. We heard this morning from Galatians. We heard there is no longer slave or free, Jew or Greek, male or female. The common denominator is common to all. Recognition of belonging, of being children of God, through the teachings of this Jesus. Now, this passage from Paul's letter to the Galatians is remarkable for its time and continues to be remarkable for ours. It preaches an inclusion we have not yet managed to embrace or live out. G.K. Chesterton, in his book, What's Wrong with the World, wrote, "The Christian ideal has not been tried and found wanting. It has been found difficult and left untried." The words of this passage move the circle of belonging outward from tribalism, beyond gender, beyond economic strata or place in society. They are, quite simply, astonishing. All belong. None are excluded. In Paul's time, this fledgling Jesus movement was confirming access to God, and that's not even the right word. Let me try again. In these words, Paul is changing the rules about who controls access to the holy, who has the capacity to be aware of the gift, from the few to the all in its geography. And in our day, and in our geography, lines from a poem by Rupi Kaur, and it goes, "My God is the refugee's breath as she's running, is living in the starving child's belly, is the heartbeat of the protest. My God was last seen washing the homeless man's feet. My God is not as unreachable as they'd like you to think. My God is beating inside us infinitely." And the third word, challenge. Paul is praying for the movement in Philippi, and this is his prayer: "That your love overflow more and more with knowledge and full insight to help you determine what is best." And in the translation from the Message, which some of you might be familiar with, it goes on to say, "Live a lover's life, circumspect and exemplary, a life Jesus will be proud of, bountiful in fruits of the soul, making Jesus attractive to all, getting everyone involved in the glory and the praise of God." In this prayer is a challenge to live according to the teachings of Jesus, first, growing in knowledge and insight, second, bountiful in fruits from the soul and overflowing in love, third. What Paul is describing here is discipleship in his time. What does it mean to be a disciple of Jesus in this time, to seek to follow his ways in this place? And the answer for this morning is in the title of the sermon, What George Crowley Said. And none of you know who George Crowley was unless you looked it up. But George Crowley was an Irish minister who wrote the lyrics to the hymn we sang just before the message, "Spirit of God, descend upon my heart." What George Crowley wrote is a passage to discipleship. It's hymn 378, and you may want to read it over again. The first line is, "Spirit of God, descend upon my heart." I found another version of the hymn, and the first line is, "Spirit of God who dwells within my heart." And finding this was such a gift to me when I was writing this message, and I hope to you too this morning. These two different lines, "Spirit of God, descend upon my heart," and "Spirit of God who dwells within my heart," describe my sense of God. And the theological word used to describe this is panentheism. They have a word for everything in theology. And it means God is in all things. God pervades all things, and not only that, exists beyond space and time. So the concept of the Spirit both descending and being within can both be held in comfort and in hope and in challenge. It is a relief to be able to fit the experience of worship, the experience of God, to a theology. Perhaps this might be true for you as well. What George Crowley wrote is a path to discipleship. Spirit of God, descend upon our hearts. Spirit of God, who dwells within my heart, gift. Teach us to love you as we ought to love, belonging. Take the dimness of our souls away, challenge. Gift, belonging, challenge. And here is where the next few years come in. As many of you are aware, I am in the position of being the interim minister here. It is usual following a period of long period of tenure like that of Malcolm's and John Joseph's to have a period of reflection and adjustment and pondering next steps with a view at the end of the process to calling another lead minister. So this means my time with you is finite. But in the time we have together, we will revisit this question. What is God calling us to do in this place, in this community? Your recent visioning process in this place, headed up by Board Chair Vera Taylor, gives us a good starting point. And so members of the Renewal Transition Team will begin there. There will be consultation with the congregation, the staff, the board, and the surrounding community. We will be careful and we will be deliberate. In the words of our outreach chair, Dorcas Beaton, this will be a time of sorting values and seeing possibilities. So stay tuned, and we will keep you informed, and we invite your participation. And this is also a time to be gentle with one another. There is grief in change and time needed for adjusting. Both Jason and I are here to listen and to help. Our cards are on the table in the narthex. And in parallel with and to inform this work of this church going forward, in our preaching and our teaching around discipleship, Jason and I will be doing a series on spiritual practices that's found in your bulletin. We'll be doing that this summer. And in the fall, we will celebrate the season of creation, a sanctioned season of our church that celebrates a theology of creation and explores ecological justice. I am grateful for the gift to be here in this pulpit, in this place with you. I preached my first sermon here as a student, and I will likely preach my last here as well. And it is also good to follow in one of my forebears' steps who was in this pulpit as minister to this congregation. There is something about this place that holds out healing and hope in our collective worship. Belonging simply by being touched. Recognizing the invite to lay it all down and rest. Patricia Orr, who's one of our poets in this congregation, conveys this in the book of stories that came out about this people in this place, and it's called This Is Us Doing Church, and she describes it in a poem called Small Miracles. And Connie, Carol, and Susan or Vicky would love to help you out in the coffee hour if you would like to purchase a copy. As we seek to live in the ways of this Jesus, this United Church of ours brings a theology of acceptance and discipleship that gives us something of tremendous value and hope to share with the world, a world that is too often skewing the gospel into something unrecognizable as the good news. We have work to do, gifts to share, and spirits to nurture. Gift recognized, belonging felt, challenge accepted. May it be so for all. Amen.